The Bengals Beat Podcast is back. I'm Lindsay Patterson, joined by Cincinnati Inquirer beat writer Tyler Dragon and our producer-director. You're going to see his galleries up and his amazing work. Kareem El-Ghazar, he is back in the saddle, and I want to give him some credit because this guy, he's had himself a little bit of a week with some sickness. How you doing, Kareem?
I'm doing okay. I wasn't feeling well late Monday, definitely into Tuesday. Wednesday, I was feeling much better, and then today, this morning, whatever's going on, the nausea has returned. So I'm a little under the weather. I'm going to power through and produce this podcast for us today.
Look at that team player right there.
I'm trying, man. I think I ate something. It was a foodborne illness related. So I think I ate some turkey. I saw a recent article by this that was pushed out by Cincinnati.com about there's a recall from Kroger and Aldi poultry that might be contaminated with listeria. And I suspect that it was listeria because I rarely ever get sick with anything in general. So when I ate something, I knew as soon as an hour after I ate that turkey sandwich on Monday, I was like, something's not sitting right.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I was back and ready to go yesterday, and then I woke up this morning with a little bit of nausea. So just a little bit. I'm okay. I'm hanging in there.
Well, if you run to the bathroom, we'll know why.
The real MVP behind the scenes over there. And I'm one of those people, though. And Kareem and Tyler, I've talked about it with you guys before. You guys have those radio voices. But this is going to sound low-key silly. But when I have a cold, I love the way my voice sounds. It sounds so much better than it does. It's so high-pitched and all over the place. But Kareem, you already have a radio voice. That little cold that you have going on, too, it kind of adds to it.
Yeah. You know, I think my son or my wife got some kind of little cold, and then they shared it with me. So I'm hanging in. I'm doing okay, but looking forward to talking some Bengals. It's been a few sessions. I've been all over the place with Bearcat football coverage and some other things I'm doing here at the newsroom. So it's good to be back in the saddle talking Bengals.
Nothing really has changed since Kareem has left. The Bengals are currently winless and pretty much to the same old thing we've been talking about, but with the offensive line, a couple changes. And Tyler, we talked about it earlier in the week, John Jerry getting some reps at left tackle, and he actually looked okay under Smith sidelined at the moment. I know they're rotating Alex Redmond in there, which is a little scary because it's not a position he's all too familiar with. What do you think the move's going to be on Sunday? And will more than likely be John Jerry.
Yeah, if Andre Smith isn't able to go, then it's going to be John Jerry, and then Alex Redmond will be the emergency left tackle there. Still no Cordy Glenn.
No.
It's going on 2 months, but since he won't be able to play and Andre Smith went down with an ankle injury in the third quarter of last week's game, the Bengals are looking at going with John Jerry. And when he got in there last week, he did a pretty good job. In fact, last game as a whole against the Cardinals was the offensive line's best game this season. They did pretty well against Arizona. And I mean, the offensive line is much maligned, but they deserve some credit in week 5 because they stepped up to the plate. Andy Dalton was not pressured that much. He was only sacked one time. So I have to give the offensive line credit. And then Joe Mixon had a season-high 93 yards rushing. So a lot of that is attributed to the offensive line.
It would be a good week for Kareem for the run game to keep going on the road against the Baltimore Ravens. They are going to put Billy Price out there along the line. And at this point in the season, when you're 0-5, you're playing another rival, it's almost like, why not just try different guys on the offensive line?
I mean, you know, we're 0-5 here, and I'm not really sure what else you can do with the offensive line or generally throughout the entire roster except experiment and kind of mix and match. And I think that's what they have to do. I have a question, though. I read, you know, John Fay's article from yesterday or the day before, I believe. I'm not sure. He said, you know, Billy Price is starting at guard over Michael Jordan.
Yes. Well,
did we get a reason why?
Michael Jordan has not performed that well. He's dealing with some rookie growing pains, which is natural at that position. He hasn't really pass block that well. He's been getting beat, especially in that Pittsburgh game. Cam Hayward kind of gave it to him.
I gotcha.
But
he did.
I mean, Cam Hayward gives it to a lot of people.
That's for sure.
But that was Michael Jordan's worst game, and it kind of trickled into week 5 against the Cardinals. He did better, but the Bengals want to see Billy Price out there. He's a first round pick, and he's motivated to prove that he was worthy of that first round choice. And the start of the season obviously didn't go his way with losing out that center position with Trey Hopkins, but now he has an opportunity to prove himself at the left guard spot, and so we'll see.
I mean, what do you got to lose? You're 0-5.
Yeah, what do you got to lose? Yeah, I mean, it's been a revolving door at that offensive line position, especially that left tackle and now the left guard spot. The whole side of the left side of the line has been underperforming. I feel like the right side has done a little bit better. Mm. The whole line hasn't done really that great, with the exception of Trey Hopkins. Trey Hopkins has been above average. He's the only offensive lineman that has. But overall, that left side is behind the right side.
Gotcha. You know, back to your topic, back to your point, Lindsay, about Joe Mixon getting it going. We first started to see a little bit of liveliness from Joe Mixon in Buffalo. And then essentially, you know, identical back-to-back opening drives week 4 and week 5. You know, in Pittsburgh, they ran the ball. They were, looked like a good-looking opening drive. Well, with Joe Mixon leading the way, and then it stalled out. You know, there was a couple. There was two options, two opportunities to go to the end zone with Eifert and Auden Tate in Pittsburgh. And then in week 5, same thing. Excuse me. Same thing is that you had a really nice-looking opening drive. Pounded it with Mixon. I think what he had 50 or 60 yards on that opening.
60 yards on the opening drive.
You know, and so got to keep that going, because that builds confidence in Mixon, and that builds confidence in the offensive line. Even though, again, as you guys mentioned, the much maligned offensive line. So it's really critical. Just even if they lose again, keep it rolling with Joe Mixon, because that's the future of your offense. The future, arguably, the future of your franchise. You don't want to, you know, although he's not short of confidence. Right. Yeah. But you want to continue to you know, instill confidence in him and in the offensive line.
I actually want to bounce off that a little bit, Kareem, because I've brought it up with Tyler, and I know he has plenty on Cincinnati.com about it, about how they're using the offense right now. Are you a little surprised with how they've used of Gio Bernard?
Well, I thought Gio has demonstrated in his 7 years in the league that he's a tough player, and he can run between the tackles. And he can catch the ball out of the backfield. And I would think when this offense is struggling a little bit, particularly in the red zone and in third down, you dink and dunk with Gio. So I'm a little surprised, you know, the Bengals aren't using him that as much. And then from a business perspective, I mean, I don't know how much coaches think about, you know, or specifically this coaching staff thinks about, the Bengals paid this guy this much, but they paid him nearly $10 million for a contract extension. You'd think they play him more. So from a football X's and O's perspective, yes, I think we need to see Gio in more third down pass catching situations at the very least. I actually agree with, you know, pound it. And with Joe Mixon, give him 15, 16, 20 touches a game, including catches out of the backfield. But definitely want to see Gio a little bit more, because to spell Joe and to give the defenses some other kind of look. But they really could use him on third down in the red zone. He's demonstrated he can catch the ball out of the backfield and score touchdowns.
And one thing you mentioned there was the red zone, and we've talked plenty about the issues they have. They have playmakers who can make those plays, and I know Tyler Eifert would like to have a couple balls back. Andy Dalton could say the same in the last couple of games. Andy pretty much said, like, look, we are trying in the red zone. Some things aren't working out for us, but I feel you go into this Baltimore Ravens game, you're 0-5, it's a rival game, you got to be more aggressive, and that's going to be going for it versus the field goal.
Yeah, I mean, they're one of the worst red zone offenses in the entire National Football League. And I totally agree that you need to have – I feel like they should have Joe Mixon and Gio out there at the same time in the red zone. In week 5, they had a play to – I believe it was a 3rd-and-2, and they had Gio and Joe out there, and they threw a pass. I mean, Gio was wide open, and that's because some of your playmakers are all in the field. I mean, you have Gio out there, and then Joe obviously calls his attention, and you got a first down play. So they need to use that as a blueprint in the red zone. That play got them in the red zone, but then they stalled out, which is becoming a common theme for the Bengals. But yeah, once you enter that red zone, you have to get 7 points. 3 is not enough. They got 3 in Pittsburgh, and then they didn't score any time else. Because 3 points, kicking a field goal, that's not a momentum builder. It's just, you know, it's just a field goal is 3 points.
And you're settling.
Yeah, you're settling. And then when the opposing team goes And the very next drive, they score a touchdown like the Cardinals did. It's like, well, you're already starting from a hole, and they are building momentum, and you're playing from behind again. And you have to play catch-up the whole game like they have been this entire season.
You know, and I think one thing that would really benefit this offense from the jump, from the start of games, is playing in a hurry-up, no huddle. I mean, that's one of Andy Dalton's strengths. And frankly, there's a sense of urgency at this point. You know what I mean? I understand the argument that you want to get settled into the game, establish this, establish that. But, I mean, when you're 0-5 and you have to look at what can we do well, and one of the things that Andy Dalton does well is no huddle. And no huddle generally gives an up-tempo offense generally gives defenses trouble. Because they can't substitute, they're basically playing a base defense. And we've seen it. We saw those scoring drives to kind of put him back into the game against Arizona. Those were no huddle, up tempo series. So I think we need to see more of that with Geo mixed in. And I think that'll, again, build confidence, maybe get a win.
Yeah. Now,
maybe get a W.
I agree with that, but not in this game, week 6, because the Ravens, they have the number one scoring offense in the league. They have the number 3 total offense in the league. And for an offense like the Bengals,
you
need to keep them off the field.
That's a really good point.
Control time of possession, establish the run game, and, you know, just control the clock. Play late into the clock and pound the rock. And have those 21, 20 personnel groupings in there and dink and dunk. And that's how you keep them off the field as the Ravens, and their offense can't find a rhythm. And the Ravens are built to run the football too. They're built to control the clock, and then they hit you with those big plays with Brown and have Lamar Jackson running wild. So you don't want that if you're the Bengals. You want to keep all that off the field.
And I didn't mean to interject there. I'm sorry, Tyler.
No worries.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that's a really good point about, you know, the number one. Who would have thought that they're the number one scoring offense?
Yeah.
Because going into the season, you know, their defense has been exposed. So
yeah.
Their defense has been exposed. Keep them on the field. That's a really good point. You know, you pound it with Mixon, control the ball, and that defense apparently is not as good as last year so far this season. So to the exploit it. Take advantage of it.
Yeah, they're missing C.J. Mosley 100%. Terrell Suggs, too. They're missing a lot of key pieces back there that they had. And then Tony Jefferson is out for the year. Their safety, he tore his ACL last week.
And one thing with the Bengals defense, I know both sides of the ball, there's plenty of weaknesses right now. But if you've watched the last couple weeks, they've had great starts. I mean, offensively, like Kareem said, the no huddle has worked for Andy Dalton, and we really saw that late. One thing that Andy Dalton did bring up in his press conference on Wednesday afternoon, we're so close. He said, you know, we could be 3-2 right now. It's always a what-if game when you look at the score. There are times when, yeah, if you would have went for a touchdown versus a field goal, you might have won that game. But my question is, Kareem and Tyler, when you look at how the season has played out, I mean, they didn't belong in the Niners game. The Steelers game was an embarrassment. I think if they were to play that game again, I think versus Pittsburgh at Paul Brown Stadium, it's going to look a little different. I don't think we're going to see that Monday Night Football show. And, of course, they're without Mason Rudolph right now, so that'll be telling in the next couple weeks too. But when you look at this team and the schedule of where they're at, and Zach Taylor's had the same agreements with Andy Dalton that they could be 3-2. They're so close, you know, getting some of the breaks there. Was it just week one that they had 3 weeks to prepare for Seattle, and Seattle kind of took that as, it's the Cincinnati Bengals, I don't really know what we're going to get with them? Or is it just like this team isn't good enough? It's just a bad football team.
I think, you know, one of the things, the main things, takeaways that I've so far from this season is you have to compete at the line of scrimmage. Ideally, you want to win the line of scrimmage, but let's just say you ideally need to compete at the line of scrimmage. They're not competing at the line of scrimmage on the offensive line and, surprisingly, shockingly, on the defensive line. I argued that the defensive line was probably their strongest position group. That was my argument in training camp. So when you can't compete at the line of scrimmage, plus you have a soft run defense and intermediate defense, a team like the 49ers are going to crush you.
You know, your guy Breida,
you know, and they're gonna run you down the throat. That and that recipe in general, even the Steelers during that game, they were doing a lot of, you know, backyard football play calling, you know what I mean, with the what is it, the push pass or whatever it was called, and the shovel pass. And so, you know, but that's a form of a running game. That's a form of attacking the intermediate defense. So if you can't compete the line of scrimmage and you have a soft run and intermediate defense, it's a recipe for disaster. And I think, so to sum it up, they're playing bad football. It's a bad team.
That's fair.
Yeah. Kareem's been reading Cincinnati.com because that's basically what I've been talking about this entire time. The defensive line has underperformed this season. Carlos Dunlap, Geno Atkins, they are supposed to set the tone, and they really haven't as a group on that defensive line. They did in Seattle, and it had a ripple effect on the entire team. They were in that game. But since the Seattle game, the defensive line has been missing in action. I mean, they made Mason Rudolph look like Big Ben almost out there. They made Josh Allen look like the second coming of Steve Young. Like, so the defensive line has underperformed, and then we already knew the offensive line was going to have trouble this season, and it's been bad, and we knew that. The only player that has been above average is Trey Hopkins, and other than that, it's just been sub-mediocre for the entire offensive line. So when you're losing the battle in the trenches consistently, that is going to negatively affect your entire football team, because teams are built on the offensive line and on the defensive line. It affects your whole back end of the defense on the defensive line, and then obviously the offensive line affects your entire offense. And when those two units aren't performing well, it's going to affect your football team.
And I want to go back to that a little bit, because look, with the offensive line going into the season, we've actually known this for 2 to 3 years. It's just a bad offensive line. They have plenty of weaknesses on there. And yes, Trey Hopkins has actually been a positive when you look at the whole picture. But yeah, I agree. The defensive line underperforming. You have talented guys on the defensive line that should be getting to the quarterback. I think guys like Carl Lawson, Jesse Bates, William Jackson III, those guys are playing disappointing football too. And it's all been really surprising when you see the talented guys, some Pro Bowlers on that defensive side who aren't performing right now. And speaking of which, when we're talking about kind of plugging different guys in the offensive line, seeing what you have at 0-5, Jermaine Pratt, what do you do in that situation?
I'm glad you brought him up.
Well, when he's been in, and it hasn't been much at the linebacker position, he's played like 30 snaps defensively. He's had some rookie growing pains. He's been out of position. He's gotten run over a few times by offensive linemen. He only has, I believe, like 6 tackles on the season, and some of those are on special teams. He's getting a lot of special teams opportunity, but as a linebacker, he just hasn't shown the promise as he did in the preseason and during training camp. And that's because, I mean, the speed of the game is totally different, and coming from college into the NFL. So he still needs some more time. I still believe that he has the potential to be a starting linebacker on this team next year or the year after that, but right now he's still a ways away from that. He's raw, and a lot of that is he plays safety in college, so moving down to the middle of the field in the linebacker position, that has affected him, so he's a little bit inexperienced, and it shows.
He played, of all the games so far this season, he played the most at linebacker in the Arizona game, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, because I did notice that when I was taking pictures down there. I'm like, oh, Jermaine Pratt's in there a little bit more. I was like, I kind of like this. You know, I'm glad to see more of that. Again, Bengals are 0-5. Stick him in there, you know?
Let's see. Got nothing to lose at this point.
Yeah, what do you got to lose? I mean, maybe he can make a couple plays. He needs that experience. If you're going to play a rookie, this is the time to play them at a crucial position like a linebacker, right?
I agree, and they have Reynolds in there a lot, and he's a veteran. You already pretty much know what you have in him, and he signed, you know, a short-term deal with the team. So instead of Reynolds, just have Pratt in there.
Right.
Let him grow. Yes, he's going to make mistakes, and there are going to be rookie growing pains, but you drafted him in the third round to see what he can do. You obviously have high hopes for him, so let him out there and have him go through his mistakes.
It's a good investment to have him make his mistakes.
Yes.
Now, as opposed to when they're 5-0 and you got a rookie linebacker out there making mistakes.
100%.
Right? And then, you know, Sam Hubbard on the defensive line, I think, is the brightest spot on the defensive line.
Leads the team in sacks with three.
He leads the team. Okay. And so, he, you know, again, one thing I notice on the field is physicality. That's the one thing that jumps out at me because I'm so close to the action. And Sam Hubbard is a physical player, and he has been putting a lot of pressure, getting his hands up, making quarterbacks uncomfortable. So, you know, we're over here talking about the 0-5 Bengals and how, you know, crappy they are, and that they are playing crappy football. But we also have to point out, you know, some the bright spots, and I think Sam has really shown that he's playing at a really good professional level and contributing from a unit that was supposed to contribute a lot more.
Yeah, he's playing his best football. And then Andrew Billings, he's playing pretty well too at the interior of the defensive line. So both of those players are playing above average, but as a whole, the whole defensive line isn't.
I have a Sam Hubbard idea, though, because Tyler and I talked about this, Kareem. The fullback is back. It is back in the NFL, even though everybody wanted it to be gone. You look at the 49ers, they were taking advantage of it. Sam Hubbard has had some moments in his rookie career where he played a little fullback close to the goal line. maybe get him out there and do a little mix-up on the offensive side.
You're joking, but that I think that's a
good,
great idea.
Right?
Because, again, there's no run blocking going on here.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you need to reinstill the fullback position with Sam Hubbard, let's do it. And we need to chip some more, two tight end, three tight end sets, you know, stick them in there.
Stick them in there, run power up the right side.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my hot take of the week. I have one every week pretty much on this podcast.
That's a good hot take. Yeah. That's a good hot take.
And we'll end it here before we look ahead to the Ravens. When you look at AJ Green, he actually talked to Bengals.com, Jeff Hobson, yesterday, and he was still at the facility. It was 6:30. He said, I get here at 6:30. I leave at 6:30. I'm rehabbing. I want to get out there. He says, if you give me 16 games, I will have the yardage. I'm going to be the same player I am. And he's being pretty honest. Like, look, he's not dumb. He hears his name in trade talks, and it's not really with the Bengals, but he hears the national media talk, and AJ could play here. AJ could go to this contender. And look, Kareem, you've been around AJ Green enough in his career to know that this guy, and believe it or not, I know people are like, oh, of course he's going to tell the media that. I truly believe he wants to finish his career in Cincinnati, and he wants to be out there. And again, Larry Fitzgerald is someone that he looks at as a mentor, as someone who stayed his career with Arizona Cardinals, and I truly believe he wants to stay. Or do I think it's the right thing as a business model? Not really, because I think you can get something for AJ Green, and if somebody's calling you for a first round for a 31-year-old wide receiver, you say, hello, let's make a deal. About him, what do you see out of him for this team, and when he could return, or his future in Cincinnati?
I think for AJ Green personally and his personality, that's the reason why he wants to stay in Cincinnati. He's very cerebral. He's quiet. Obviously, I'm not saying that he's not social. You could see he's social with his teammates. But this is the kind of market that he likes. Low-key, medium, small market team. No one's going to bug me here. You know what I mean? So I think that's one of the top reasons why he wants to probably stay here. Secondly, I can see the feeling of unfinished business kind of lurking on his mind a little bit. So I think that's another reason why he would want to stay here. And the other perspective, you know, if the Patriots, who really love getting that veteran wide receiver, and you're AJ Green, and you're like, okay, if I'm going to be traded, I probably would like to be traded to the Patriots, because yes, it's a bigger market, but I can be low key. Bill Belichick's going to, you know, protect me, and I don't have to, you know, talk to anybody if I don't want to, you know what I'm saying? So it's not like he's going to go to New York or a bigger market or a bigger media market where he's kind of forced to talk or forced to engage more with the public with the media. So, you know, I think that would be kind of the only out that he would be okay with, would be going to like the Patriots or something like that. But I think for his future here, he's going to need to get paid again. I don't know if he's going to get, you know, super overall number one money. He's going to get number one receiver money on a team, but not highest paid overall or anything like that. And that's from a business decision, I think you're right, Lindsay. You know, do the Bengals really shell out that kind of money? They do for their homegrown players like AJ, like Gino, like Carlos, like Andy. But that's the question. You know, 31 years old, he can still play. I have no doubt about it. I think he can put up big numbers like he's always has. It's a tough situation, but I really don't think he wants to go anywhere else aside from a place where he can be himself and be quiet, you know.
So from an injury standpoint, AJ Green told me last week that he was a few weeks away. So that's last week. He's not going to play this Sunday, obviously, in Baltimore. The door is open next week against the Jaguars, or possibly the week after that. As far as the business side of football, I don't believe the Bengals want to trade AJ Green. That is against Mike Brown's philosophy. He would love for his star receiver to be a Bengals lifer. Now, is it the best move? It depends what direction the Bengals want to go. Are they in complete rebuild mode, or do they still believe that they are a few pieces away on both sides of the football from being a legit contender? I personally feel that they are a little further away from being a legit contender than the Bengals organization thinks. But to your point, AJ's personality is pretty much Cincinnati. He is low-key. He likes to keep to himself. He's a quiet guy. He talks to his teammates. He'll talk to the media every now and then, but he's not a rah-rah guy. He's not a look-at-me guy. He's not the type to, he's not a diva like a lot of these receivers are. He's the polar opposite of Antonio Brown. So when you think about that, then yes, okay, you feel like, well, he might end his career in Cincinnati. But then on the flip side, you have to realize, okay, what are my goals? How do I want to finish out my NFL career? Do I want to be on a rebuilding team, which I think this team is, or do I want to compete for Super Bowls at the tail end of my prime? And the best opportunity for him to do that, quite frankly, if I'm going to be 100, it's not in Cincinnati. Right. It's in a place like New England.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you make up you brought up a good point about, you know, AJ in terms of looking up to Fitzgerald. You know, if he looks at that as a model for him, Fitzgerald is 16 or 17 years in the league, and he's stuck it out through a couple of rebuilds probably. This is, number two or number three here with this team, but he keeps playing. For this Bengals team, I think with the core players of, you know, Atkins and Dunlap, AJ, Dalton, I think the window is closing. I don't think there are a couple.
Okay.
I think the window is closing, because I don't think they're a few pieces away from being a playoff Super Bowl contender. So if the Bengals front office comes to that conclusion, you know, blow it up, tear it down, and full-on rebuild with a new coach. You know, I think that's a good opportunity for the new coach too. You know, like, hey, okay, you're the new coach. We're going to give you, you know, all the, you know, select the personnel, tell us what you need, and we'll go get that personnel so we can run your system.
And I've compared that to where the 49ers are, but you have to be aggressive in your front office of what Kyle Shanahan went through when he was a new coach and his new team. I think with this team, and we'd mentioned the rebuild, the team's not publicly going to say they're in a rebuild. They're going to make moves and pieces, you would think, if they're in the rebuild. But what is scary about the situation, and Kareem actually brought it up, and he said, is this group going to, you know, bring you a bring you a championship, you know, be the team? And I think it has run its course.
Yeah.
I think there were opportunities, and you go back to 2015, if Andy Dalton doesn't get hurt when he tries to make that tackle after the interception against the Steelers, he was having an MVP year. His O-line was solid. They were a good football team. They were one of the best that they've had in the Marvin Lewis era when he was here. But at this point, it isn't a couple pieces away. And I think for an organization and a business in general, when you have to admit that you have to start over, that's starting at rebuild number one. They're not at that stage. They're not at the stage of admitting we have a rebuild, because I truly think they feel like they have a couple pieces away when truly they don't.
Yeah, I 100% agree that that's how they feel right now, that they are still close regardless of the record. regardless of how these games have turned out, they feel like, well, AJ's hurt, and, you know, our offensive line is banged up. We lost our first-round pick for the season. Our left guard that started last year retired, and Cordy was supposed to start at left guard. So it's been – the offensive line's been in shambles, and they feel like, well, you know, our season started off bad with the offensive line and AJ. If we had those pieces, then they feel like that they would be in the hunt in the division. And the division, the AFC North, is not like they're world beaters.
Right.
The Browns aren't playing that well. We all predicted that the Browns weren't as good as all those headlines predicted them to be.
Hey, I know a trash team when I see one.
So Browns, does Adam Jones.
Browns are trash.
Yeah. And the Ravens are going to be the Ravens, and they found themselves their franchise quarterback and receiver and whatnot. The Steelers are going to be the Steelers, but the division is not – it's not like you have a team like the Patriots – that you have to compete year in and year out that are Super Bowl contenders. So it's what I'm trying to say is the gap between the Ravens and the Browns and the Bengals and the Steelers, they're not that far. But even still, there is a gap between the Bengals and the first place team.
Yeah, for sure. It's not as pronounced. It's not as wide as, for example, you know, like New England and Miami.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. That's a perfect example, right?
Yeah.
I just, you know. So, like, yeah, for sure. There's definitely gaps and between first and last place team, but it's not that wide. Hey, who knows? Maybe the Bengals rip off 10 wins here.
Yeah, it's not insurmountable.
No. Cream laughs.
I'm just saying, they rip off 10 wins.
You
want
to
bet business?
You want to take that to Vegas?
Maybe Jimmy John's or something.
Jimmy John.
I wouldn't bet anything on that. Ripping off 10 wins. Nope.
The organization, they have some really hard decisions to make in the next couple weeks, and just by the end of the season, what they want to do at quarterback and all of that in the offseason. So we will see as the beat goes on. But will this team, we're going week by week because that's how the NFL plays out.
Right.
Are they going to fall to 0-6 on the season after Sunday?
So we have Clifton Brown, who covers the Ravens for BaltimoreRavens.com. Clifton, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine, thanks. How are you?
Good. I'm ready to come up to Baltimore. You know, I went to Howard, so I'm it's kind of my neck of the woods up there.
Excellent. My wife did as well. In fact, we're going to homecoming this weekend.
Oh, really? Okay, before the game, huh?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so speaking of the game, it's a big game for both teams. Obviously, AFC North battle. Baltimore wants to stay ahead in the division, and the Ravens, I mean, the Bengals, unfortunately, are still searching for their first win. So I have a couple questions for you about the Ravens. Lamar Jackson has looked much improved this season as a quarterback in year two. What's been the biggest reason he's been able to take such a leap as a passer?
Well, he's put in the work, and he's been able to put that work and transfer it onto the field. This summer, he spent a lot of time with the private coach that he has down in Florida throwing the football. Obviously, once training camp began, he continued his work with the Ravens quarterback coach and really the entire staff. And his fundamentals are a lot better. His base is narrower with his legs. He's getting more of his legs into his throw. He's more stable as a thrower. There was never any question about his arm strength, nor was there any question about his ability to see the field. It was all a matter of accuracy. And he is much more settled in the pocket. He's throwing with more velocity and more accuracy. And obviously hasn't lost any of his dynamic ability to run. So, yeah, he's a true dual-threat quarterback in the NFL. And, yeah, I think that, you know, at age 22, I think it was, you know, unfair. And even now, so many people want to make final judgments about Lamar Jackson. He's only 22 years old. He was the youngest quarterback ever to start in a playoff game. If his career path follows the arc of most quarterbacks, he's going to be a better player, you know, 4 or 5 years from now than he is now if he stays healthy. So yeah, you're seeing the maturation, a quick maturation this year of a quarterback with a lot of talent, and obviously it's manifested itself in the way he's been playing.
Yeah, I do appreciate the way he's playing because I had him as the best quarterback in last year's draft, so he's making me look good.
Excellent. I think that's borne true so far without question.
Speaking of this year's draft, are you surprised how Marquise Brown has quickly developed into the Ravens' number one wide receiver?
You know, I am a little, mainly because of how much time he missed in the offseason. He had the foot surgery in February. He wasn't ready for the start of training camp. Played in just one preseason game. Didn't have that many reps. And even when the season began, the first couple of weeks of the season, he wasn't practicing every day. He was usually getting at least one day off during the week because they wanted to be really careful with his foot. But once he stepped on the field, he was electric. He's not just fast. He changes directions very quickly. And he's got great hands, too. He's not a big guy at all, but he catches seemingly everything thrown to him. He had a really tough catch for a touchdown against Pittsburgh last week where he really got hit hard, held onto the football. He's had some sideline catches, which really showed his hands and his agility, keeping his feet in bounds. And then, of course, he can just flat-out fly. So, yeah, he's a special talent. The Ravens haven't always hit on wide receivers in the draft, but on this guy, it looks like they have a winner.
Okay. And on the other side of the football, the Ravens had the top defense last season. This season has been a different story. They're ranked in the middle of the pack in total defense, and their defense is, it looks like it's taken a step back. What's been the cause of that?
Well, they lost a lot of talent in the offseason on the defense. C.J. Mosley, Eric Weddle, Terrell Suggs, Za'Darius Smith. That's one-third of that defense that was ranked number one. Now, obviously, they signed Earl Thomas, which I think was a major addition, but the new pieces have had some issues fitting together. They gave up a lot of big plays, particularly in the loss to Cleveland, with guys simply just being uncovered, mistakes in the secondary. So last week there was a shakeup defensively. They signed Josh Bynes, a player who had been with the Ravens, but not since 2013. They signed him, and he started Sunday against the Steelers after just three practices at middle linebacker. They moved Peanut Amosor, who used to be the middle linebacker, who he moved over to take Moses, but they moved him back to weak side. And Peanut, that's his natural position. He looked a lot better at that spot. They did lose Tony Jefferson, though, the veteran safety for the year Sunday with a knee injury. So they're playing better, but they're still trying to fit the pieces together. And no, they have not played up to last year's standards, but they feel like they can be a better defense as they grow together and the season goes along. We'll see if that's true, but yeah, no question, it's a rarity in Baltimore, but the offense has been ahead of the defense this year.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. You mentioned Tony Jefferson. How big of a loss is he to that defense?
He's definitely a loss. I mean, not only is he a solid player, he's a leader, one of the guys who they depend on to keep the defense together, and really popular in the locker room, and he's going to be missed. They have two young safeties, Chuck Clark and Deshaun Elliott, who they feel can fill the void. Okay, Clark's here for his third season. He did start a couple of games last year when Jefferson was hurt and played well. And Elliott's a guy with a lot of talent who hasn't had a chance to play much because there have been guys like Jefferson and Eric Weddle and Earl Thomas in front of him. Now he'll get a chance to play more as well. So both of those guys are faster than Tony, particularly Elliott, but they lack his experience. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play, but the Ravens feel that, you know, these guys have been here. They were drafted. They're talented. And now this is their time. And so that is going to be interesting to see how they play. And I think playing next to Earl Thomas is going to help both those guys. They'll have a veteran shoulder to lean on, even though Tony Jefferson won't be in the lineup.
Okay. And we have Clifton Brown here from BaltimoreRavens.com. Clifton, before I get you out of here, can you tell me the Ravens' biggest weaknesses going into this Week 6 AFC North game?
I mean, if I had to point to one, I'd say it's their pass rush. They only have one sack in each of the last two games. They only have one quarterback hit in the loss to Cleveland. I know Andy Dalton got sacked 8 times against the Steelers, so that's been an issue for the Bengals protecting Dalton. So that'll be interesting to me to see if the Ravens, who haven't had the pass rush they wanted this year, can get to Dalton, a quarterback who's already been sacked 20 times. Will, you know, they be able to protect Dalton and give him time to throw? Or will he be under duress, you know, like he has been a lot this season? So the pass rush, I would say, is the one area the Ravens would most want to improve, not only this Sunday, but the rest of the season.
Yeah, the Bengals have a lot of problems, as 0-5 teams have, but offensive line is probably their biggest Achilles heel, and it's been a revolving door at that left tackle position. So it is going to be that's a key area to watch, the battle in the trenches, definitely. And before I let you go, what is your prediction for Sunday?
Well, I think the Ravens will find a way to win. I'm not sure it will be a quote-unquote easy game. You know, division games have a tendency usually to be pretty competitive. Andy Dalton's definitely had some success in Baltimore. And I think the Bengals, you know, obviously looking for their first win, you know, if they can keep it close, you know, going into the second half, then they'll probably get a sense of maybe this is one we can finally, you know, get off the zero here. So, but I think the Ravens, I just think their offense is going to be a little bit too much. They can run it well. We already talked about the way Lamar is playing. I don't see the Bengals being able to keep up offensively. If the Ravens, you know, don't turn the football over a lot, I think they'll figure out a way to win.
Well, it looks like we are in agreement. I have the Ravens winning the game on Sunday, too. So we'll see what happens on Sunday. But I appreciate you joining us here in the BBP podcast.
Thanks for having me.
They are falling to 0-6. I will be shocked if the Bengals go up to Baltimore and beat the Ravens. I don't have much hope that the Bengals can beat the Ravens in Baltimore.
Baltimore is a really tough place to play. They got one of the best home field advantages in the league, definitely in the AFC North. And this Baltimore team, the way it's assembled, is assembled to beat a team like the Bengals. I don't think it's going to be close either. I think it might be like a 2-touchdown, you know, I don't know if we're giving predictions at the moment.
Yep, right now.
Okay, oh, predictions. Okay.
You know, I think it's going to be 31-17, Ravens.
Yeah, the Ravens have the number 2 rushing attack in the league, and the Bengals are the 2nd worst run stopping team in the league. So I am picking the Ravens 34, Bengals 16.
I got 28-14, and I think the Bengals will score a touchdown late in garbage time.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's not close for any of us. They're going to go to 0-6 on this season, and it's going to only get uglier. I mean, as the season goes on, it doesn't get easier for this club. I mean, looking ahead, you got to go to London and play the Rams. The Rams aren't the team from last year, and we'll get into all that as the week goes on. But what's up on Cincinnati.com?
Can you imagine Aaron Donald versus offensive line?
London. At least you guys are in London. At least you're at Wembley. That's a positive. That'd be fun.
Oh, man, but Aaron Donald on this offensive line.
That's a nightmare.
Oh, man. So, yeah, up in Cincinnati.com, I have a piece. We kind of alluded to it earlier. Should the Bengals run 11 personnel as much as they do, or should they mix it up more, running 20 personnel, 21 personnel with 2 running backs in, even some 12 personnel with 2 tight ends and 1 running back? And then 3 keys to the game is coming up today. So if the Bengals can do these 3 things, then they might actually win.
I have a question for you, Tyler. I know we're trying to wrap up here, but I just have a question. You know, I used to be a police reporter, and when I used to interview police officers, they used to kind of talk in police speak, similar to coach speak, right? Mm-hmm. And they used to use a lot of terminology like, he was a victim of homicidal violence. I mean, you mean he was killed? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, that sounded like, you know, when I hear 21 personnel and whatever personnel, it sounds like gobbledygook to me.
Okay.
What do those things mean?
Okay. So 11 personnel is 1 running back and 1 tight end and 3 receivers.
Cool.
So basically, when you look at the personnel group, the one in front is the running back.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second number is how many tight ends you have.
Gotcha.
So if I say 21 personnel, that's 2
running backs. backs.
And then that's one tight end. Mm-hmm. And then two receivers.
Gotcha.
So the first number is always a running back. The second number is always a tight end. And then the receivers fall in place after that. So 12 personnel would be what?
One running back, two tight ends.
There you go. So and how many receivers?
Going on.
Two.
Three.
Three.
No, sorry. Two. Sorry. Two. Yeah, sometimes my math even gets confused. I was not a math major. But
you put
yes,
me
12.
On the spot, man.
And I put you on the spot and even trip myself up, yes.
No,
so.
But I think there are a lot. Like, for example, I followed football for a long time, and I would consider myself, you know, trying to be a student of the game, but I don't know those terms. And again, I'm not on the beat 110%. So, like, I do other things. So I'm sure there are listeners out there that are like, what the hell is he talking about?
That is a good point. I should have mentioned that. Yeah, so the Bengals run 11 personnel, like, over 80% of the time, and that is one running back, one tight end, and three receivers. Mm-hmm. And based upon all the injuries that have happened of late, I mean, you're not playing with A.J. Uh-huh. You got John Ross out. Erickson's in concussion protocol. It's like, well, is 11 personnel still the most productive position group you should have out
gotcha.
There.
Gotcha.
It's going to be interesting as the Bengals hit the road second AFC North game of the season. If they can get that first one under Zach Taylor, it's going to be difficult. They could be falling to 0-6, but make sure you stay with Cincinnati.com. Again, Kareem Elgazar, Sam Green, they have amazing photo gallery work up there, so check it out. Tyler has his work up there, and we're going to have a prediction video coming up soon. Thanks for joining us on another episode of the BBP.